Yeah, so I'm not allowed to eat in my good clothes.
Yeah, your good clothes.
But, hey, so I'm getting my wife into the Jerry Seinfeld comedy program, the sitcom he had.
Yeah, Jerry Seinfeld show.
Yeah. She didn't get it. She didn't like watch it a lot growing up. She was vaguely aware of it. So it's on Netflix now.
Vaguely aware of it, okay.
I mean, she knew about it, but she never like really watched it. And so we're kind of watching it together, kind of going through some of the older ones.
Is she a Frasier fan?
No.
Okay.
She like a lot of girly stuff.
Mad About You?
No More Girls.
No More Girls.
No, not Mad About You.
My fiance loves Gilmore Girls.
Yep.
Loves it.
Yep. I can sit through an episode. Like, it's not terrible.
I know.
Some of the stuff she likes, I can't deal with. I just walk out of the
room. She listens to the podcast, so I'll just say this. I love Gilmore Girls. I think it's a really good show. It's got good characters.
It was fun.
Rory, I think that's the character.
Tell you what, Rory, well, they're both named Lorelai, and Rory is the daughter.
Hmm, okay.
You know who the best, the boy who was the best for Rory was Jess, actually.
Ooh, Jess, okay.
Dean was no good, and that spoiled rich kid she winds up with is no good. Jess
was the best. Okay.
Yeah.
Like a modern day love story.
This is my two cents.
But Dean, I thought Dean, is Dean the guy with the backwards hat?
I don't know. That's Luke. That's the mom's boyfriend.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha. Right now. Okay. Sorry. Luke. I derailed us. Continue.
That's all right. So, yeah, Seinfeld.
Yeah.
So, we're watching some of the old episodes. It's kind of funny. She doesn't really like Jerry. Because the older episodes, they show clips of his stand-up.
Yeah.
She's like, that's not that funny. I was like, he had to be there. It's a 90s thing. Yeah. But she likes Kramer and she likes Elaine.
Yeah. So, what about George? I would think if she doesn't like Jerry, she might not.
He gets himself into humorous situations. Yep. She doesn't like him, but you know, she sees the purpose he serves as a, you know.
Yeah.
It's funny because, you know, every time George has a new girlfriend, she's always attractive because only attractive people can be on TV for the most part. And she's always like, that girl would not be with him. That's usually what she says when George gets a new. And I'm like, yeah, it's you're right. It's TV though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so we're watching something from we're on season 5 now.
Okay.
We're watching it last night. And it's one where Elaine's new boyfriend has the same name as a serial killer. Coincidentally, he's not a serial killer, but like a lot of the the part of the plot was her boyfriend's name was Joel Rifkin. There's a serial killer in New York named Joel Rifkin, and you know, comedy ensues from the mix them ups, right?
Yep.
So another subplot of that was they go to a Giants football game. Right?
Oh yeah.
And so
I remember this.
They're sitting on the couch and Elaine is trying to subtly implant in her boyfriend's head to maybe change your first name so you don't have the same name as a killer, right? And because they're going to the football game, she's looking through like a football magazine, you know, and just like sitcoms, she's like, oh, you know what? There's a lot of, or the boyfriend sits down, is like, oh, reading up on football? She's like, yeah, studying for the game. You know, there's a lot of people named Dion. That's a funny name. Maybe you should change your name to D, you know, like a, I was like, yeah, Deion Sanders. I'm thinking like, yeah, early 90s football. And she kind of does that. And then you know what she says?
What's that?
She says, you know what's another good football name? OJ. OJ Rifkin. And I'm like, oh, that's hilarious because he's trying to change his name from a killer. And then I start thinking about the timeline. It's like, did they do that on purpose?
No.
But then it's like, there's no way Elaine wouldn't acknowledge the whole. But that was kind of like, change your name to OJ from a killer. But I was like, wait.
Mm.
So I looked up the air date.
Yep.
And the air date was before.
Okay.
The murders. It was November of 93. And the murders happened in summer of 94.
Yeah.
It was just this really weird coincidence. I was like, that is so weird. Because OJ Simpson retired in 1979. So he's not even a current. Why bring up OJ?
OJ.
Text.
I don't know if you remember, he was probably one of the more famous athletes after his retirement.
Yeah, no, but he was in movies and everything. He just wasn't in football.
But he did announce, I think he did sideline reporting and all
was
that.
Was he in an okay?
He was still tied to the game. Like, I think that he's still around. And he was one of the more famous football players. So I understand why they used OJ.
Okay. So it's just a little slight irony. I thought it was kind of funny. It's like, oh, yeah. And I had to look up the timeline and everything.
That's a little bit of a wormhole. You could have broke the internet with that one.
I wonder if anybody's ever tweet about it.
Tweet about that. See if.
Well, you know, it's funny. A lot of young people probably don't know about O.J. Simpson.
We have listeners all over the world too. So some of them. Yeah,
in America.
But I'm
in
curious.
In American football, O.J. Simpson averaged. One for a whole season, he averaged 143 yards per game, which is pretty impressive.
And after he retired, he was found innocent, quote unquote, but most likely killed his ex-wife and a waiter delivering, I believe, sunglasses to her or something like that, in a very gruesome manner.
Yeah.
And there is a documentary about that. So if you're unfamiliar with the American football player, OJ, he's still alive. He went to jail for, I believe, theft, like stealing his.
Yeah, ironically. It's civil. Yeah.
But
it's
crime of the century. I said crime of the century type of.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
I'm more impressed with the 143 yards a season.
Okay.
Yeah. It's pretty impressive.
OJ, yeah.
You know, it's funny because I was like 10 when that was going on. So he was famous because of the thing. I didn't grow up watching him play.
Yeah.
And then it's only like looking back and reading stuff about it that I realized, oh, this guy was just, it'd be like, I don't even know who, really like a Michael Strahan or somebody who like crossed, who was a famous athlete and then was also a big movie media star.
Tony Romo?
Yeah, Tony Romo, The Rock almost. Just like, yeah. Somebody who transcend, like really famous from their old sport, transcended it, and then he maybe killed. Was Nicole? Well, I didn't follow it. Was they talk like it's a waiter? Was that a euphemism? Was that her like?
Boyfriend? No. He was a waiter.
Was he just a random waiter for real?
So they went to. For some reason, I know about this because I've read about it, and then I watched the documentary. I believe, I'm pretty sure this is. They went out to dinner. She left her glasses there, and after like the restaurant was like closing down, he was dropping off, I believe, her glasses at her, like he called her or something like that, and he was dropping them off, and then that's when the murder took place. Like horrible, like to be, yeah, very bad. So he was just there actually dropping off glasses. So anyway, let's not get into this.
I just thought
like you have a you want to dive deep into true crime. That's a genre that we have not covered in book wise.
That was a little the Seinfeld thing caught my eye.
That was
that's a weird coincidence.
Yeah, that's
trying to change your name from a killer. You don't want to sound like a killer. Change your name to OJ.
He's a killer. Okay.
Allegedly.
You've been busy since we've last done an episode. Done some research. You've been
watching Jerry Seinfeld.
I like it. All right. And on that note, welcome to There Will Be Books, a podcast about books and Jerry Seinfeld. I'm Peter, joined as always by Matt. Matt, how are we going to transition from Jerry Seinfeld, OJ Simpson, killer, to what we're talking about tonight?
Death is one of the main characters.
Okay. That's a very good point. Because tonight we are talking about Terry Pratchett's book, Hogfather, a book in the Discworld series. His very famous, very popular Discworld series. I believe it's the 20th book in that series. It is a new author to me, and obviously a new book, new writing style, new everything. I'd seen when we worked at the old bookstore together, Terry Pratchett's books, they are in America. They have a lot of the mass market, similar kind of covers. I stand by my opinion that I don't like the majority of the covers for the mass markets here in America. I believe I've looked up some of the covers for the UK versions, and I like them much better.
They're a lot better. Yeah.
And I know you're not supposed to judge a book on its cover, but I did, and I didn't even really know what these books were about. We're doing this book for last month, kind of, and it's Christmas themed. And so when I saw this book as sort of a Christmassy type book, I nominated it, and we selected it, and I'm really glad we did, because this book is funny. It is wildly creative. It's something I don't know if just how active this guy's imagination is, and how just there's no chapters in this book. It's just continuous onslaught of funny satire, story, humor, observation, just sort of a kind of a nice cleansing palate cleaner. It's not too dark, or, you know, I don't know. What were your thoughts on the book? Initial thoughts?
It was very funny. I was actually slightly embarrassed that I hadn't read them. It was like right up my alley. Like, I should have read these before. I had heard of them. I read Good Omens, which you'd like. You'd actually like Good Omens, because it's...
Yeah, that's the one he wrote with Neil Gaiman. With Neil Gaiman.
But the style's similar. And it's kind of like this, only like with the omen and the apocalypse.
Okay.
The Antichrist is a child, done in humorous British style. It's good.
You told me earlier that you'd wanted to get the audio version of this book.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, it doesn't exist, which is kind of crazy.
But it exists, but I couldn't check it out, or it was like $96 to buy on.
Because if ever a book would be like a exciting, if they did it well, this I feel like would be a great audio book.
Oh yeah, yeah. These sort of British humor books, like P.G. Woodhouse, Douglas Adams. Is another guy this reminded me of. You do the audio right, you get a British guy to read it, and it's great. And that's what I thought. I didn't realize how prolific he was. There's 41 Discworld books.
Yeah. I saw something. He would write sometimes two in a year.
Yeah, which is impressive. And they're not shoddy. They're good.
No, they're very good books.
Doesn't feel rushed.
So I feel like if people have read Terry Pratchett, they're probably nodding along and wondering why we haven't gotten to them. But I mean, there's just certain books, and like I was saying, for me, it was just merely the cover, and I was like, I don't know if I really like this. I don't know if it's fantasy. I don't know if it's humor. And I don't know. But I will say this: I was at the bookstore, our local Old Firehouse Books, and I almost picked up another one in the series.
I'll definitely read more. Yeah,
I definitely will. If I see like used copies or even maybe a new copy, I'll definitely be picking up these. So I was very surprised by how much I enjoyed just Pratchett as a writer, and the kind of like the world he's created and his humor. And it's just some of it you kind of have to be, it's like British subtle humor, and then some of it's over the top, and some of it's, but the kind of the basic plot of this book is Hogfather, kind of Father Christmas, is missing, and Death has to take over the job of kind of bringing Christmas cheer to the world and kids.
So let's set the stage for like total newbies.
Yes.
Which we kind of were.
We are total newbies.
So this is called the Discworld series because the books take place on a fantastical planet. It's like the world shaped like a disc. Balanced, I believe, on four elephants who are in turn floating through space on a gigantic turtle.
Yeah.
Right. And so they're all Discworld, and there's parallels to our world. Mm-hmm. And one of the main characters in a lot of them is Death, you know, hooded figure, black robe, scythe. Right. And so in this one, the kind of Discworld equivalent of Santa Claus is called the Hogfather, who's got four big old pigs who drives his sleigh and delivers presents. The opening scene, we kind of start off with somebody hiring, there's an assassin's guild, mm-hmm. right? And somebody hires a really creepy assassin named Mr. Tea Time to kill somebody. And you know, it's not, they don't say it, but you kind of know.
Yes.
Yeah. And so it kind of, the plot goes from there and you just see that part. And then all of a sudden Death is pretending to be the Hogfather for some reason. And you kind of, the story gets going from there. In a lot of ways, it reminded me of Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy in the sense that you're kind of just plopped right, just how I read it. You're in and things are going and you're not familiar with the world. You just kind of like got to make sense of it.
Yeah.
Just in that sense. You know what I mean? Like you're like, okay, what's going on? I'm intrigued, but okay, what's going on?
I would say this.
And then by the end, you figure it out. But
I feel like I had no problem reading this, just jumping into the series. I think probably some of the stuff went over my, or I didn't quite grasp all the connections to everything. But Pratchett does such a good job of just, he's just the sort of the humor and the spirit of the book kind of masks any sort of like confusion you may have about stuff. Like it's kind of went along and trusted that I would make sense of the world as I went along. And on the whole, I feel like the book accomplished that. So I don't think you have to start with like the first book in the series necessarily.
No,
this book, no. But
I posted a picture of it on social media and said it was my first Discworld. And a lot of people are like, oh, it's a good place to start. It doesn't seem like you have to. And half the pleasure is the tone and the humor. Like if you like Woodhouse or Douglas Adams, you'll like this.
All right. He's, I guess in the beginning, I was reading about like the first books were sort of slightly different than these ones as far as parody versus satire and that realm. But I don't know. I just, I think it's a good Christmas book because we know we selected it for Christmas and it has that sort of, I don't know. You could reread this book definitely. And as sort of like a tradition. Almost.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, and like with all a lot of proto Christmas books, you know, or proto, what's the word? A lot of fantastical type Christmas stories, Christmas movies, Christmas books, Christmas itself is at stake unless people believe, right? That's a Miracle on 34th Street, Elf, a lot of those types of things. You know, something huge has gone wrong. Something Santa's in danger. And so it's kind of like that. And, it's Death has to step in
and
pretend to be so people could believe because it'll be really, really bad for the world if people stop believing in the Hogfather / Santa Claus, which ultimately this was about. The underlying theme here was belief and how believing in things that may not be quote unquote true actually are healthy despite what a lot of people would assume.
Yeah, I have a quote here. This is sort of these professors. One of them goes, I suppose people just believe in stuff. Obviously, there's a limit to what you can believe in. I've always said so. So what? And then they have this like machine that can like, you know what I'm talking about? Like that.
Yeah, yeah. They're having fun with the idea of a computer. An omnipotent
computer. And the computer goes, they just disappeared because they were not believed in. And seems reasonable, yet people were believing in something else, query. And just kind of it, while the book has like this humor and this madcap sort of energy to it, there is the meaning, and the importance of believing in stuff. And like, even if it's not real, it has importance to people.
Well, it goes to how much beyond that, it's how much of the magic or what makes life worth living comes from people driving their own meaning. Mm-hmm. Right. Cause one of the thing towards the end when, you know, spoiler, there's a happy ending, the Hogfather gets rescued and whatnot. But one of our other protagonists is Death's granddaughter, Susan.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And she's kind of the drug along and winds up playing a role in saving the day and everything. And she's kind of skeptical of all the supernatural stuff. And Death says it was very important for him to step in and fill in for the Hogfather, because if he didn't, if people stopped believing, then the sun wouldn't come up. And Susan just kind of rolls her eyes and is like, well, it's not, you know, the sun will come up, you know, it's not that bad. And so they save the day, and she asks Death, so have you not done that? The sun would, what would have happened? He's like, yes, the sun would have ceased to come up. Then so what would have happened is, and he says, instead of the sun coming up, the earth would have been illuminated by a giant ball of gas, which was, we would stop, you know, the point was we'd stop telling a story.
Yeah.
And it would just be this phenomenon that has nothing to do with us. And so I thought that was actually kind of an interesting, there's the underlying theme of this book.
I have two characters that I will remember from this book that I will possibly, you know, how we did the book Oscars a few episodes ago. One is the Oh God of Hangovers.
Yeah.
Character Susan meets along the way. Mm-hmm. And essentially what happens is this kind of, he's a minor god in the world, but anytime you get a person would get drunk and they don't feel hangover, that's because the Oh God of Hangovers has kind of like, he lives his life in, you know, always being hungover, I guess.
Yeah, he's the embodiment. If there's a god,
yeah,
there's like Dionysus or Bacchus or whoever, who's the epitome of a drunken reveler.
Yeah.
So he's the god of hangovers. I have a fun game to play with that later.
Okay.
The notion.
I like how playful and funny and just sort of, he's kind of a side character in sort of Susan's quest to sort of figure out what's going on.
Then she runs into him. And the joke is he's not the god of hangovers. He's the old god of hangovers. Yeah. Because when you're hungover, you kind of say, oh, God. It was funny. Yeah.
That sort of humor, I guess, is what I like most. So yeah. that character. And then also Death. I love the way Death is, like, he kind of has to do the quote unquote, you know, Santa thing where he meets kids and then gives them gifts and stuff like that. And just sort of how he kind of like how he eases into that. He has his assistant Albert who helps him, who's also very funny. But just, I love the humor tied to Death and the Oh God of Hangovers. I just thought that it was very funny and well done. And just, I don't know. I will remember those two characters. Definitely.
I liked, my two were probably Tea Time and Susan.
Tea Time was good too.
Tea Time. There's a little joke about how he always corrects people. It's pronounced Tia Time.
Yeah.
But it, you know, I pronounce it Tea Time.
We'll call him Tea Time.
But he's just a really creepy, villainous, competent assassin. And actually right off the bat, one of the funnier lines in the book is on page one. They're talking about Mr. Tea Time and like other assassins, about how kind of creepy he is. Mr. Tea Time, who saw things differently from other people. And one of the ways he saw things differently from other people was in seeing other people as things. Later, Lord Downey of the Guild said, we took pity on him because he'd lost both his parents at an early age. I think that on reflection, we should have wondered a bit more about that. Kind of a, you know, he killed his parents. Yes. It's a very roundabout British way of, you know. Tea Time, Susan was good.
Susan's kind of your
protagonist. The which Mulder or Scully, I get confused from the X-Files, whichever one the girl was. It's always skeptical. She, you know, the skeptic being drawn along is kind of the eyes of the audience, you know, who needs, you know, things explained to her. But
exactly.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, do you think it's an underrated skill to be, I mean, these, but you said earlier, these books aren't like slapped together. Well thought out story, funny, obviously. Yeah. We're coming into the series in sort of the middle, so maybe like the nuts and bolts of the world have been figured out. But is there something underrated about an author who can just produce quality time after time?
I think so. It's impressive. As to whether it's underrated, I think there's some to it if you can produce that much.
And also like a creative spark. Because when I was reading, that's the thing that stood out to me also is just how creative his mind was. Pratchett passed away a few years ago, but just how it just almost seemed like a force of a nature to read. Just two books a year, you know, sometimes, and just, I don't know, the quality, yes. And it's, I think there's something to be said for that, to have that work ethic to produce stuff like this.
Yeah, it's very impressive. I've mentioned before, I think some John Grisham or thriller type novels, he's got one comes out every, I think, 2 years or every year. And those kind of sometimes feel rushed. Like there was a good novel in there, but it felt rushed. So two in a year that don't feel rushed, that are well-formed and satisfying, I think is very impressive.
There's also, I kind of agree with this, there's something to be said for actually completing something, and maybe it's not perfect, or maybe there's, yeah, I didn't like that or this, but there's something about an artist who can actually just produce work at a high level and not obsess over it. I think there is something to that. There's something valuable in a writer or whoever, musician or whatever, who doesn't dwell on something for years and years, and then you see the end result and you're like, well, there's still some flaws with it. And you do see that in like fantasy. Obviously the most like current famous example is George R. R. Martin. Like he's been probably not going to finish the, that series, or
maybe. Yeah. Or Patrick Rothfuss.
Patrick Rothfuss.
He's been obsessing over it for his third for 10 years. Yeah. No, it's impressive. You know, it's interesting. P.G. Woodhouse wrote a ton. Mm-hmm. And these guys are both like very funny authors. I wonder if it's something with their worldview. They just kind of know the little world they write in and they can just churn them out.
The other person, I just recently found him, and I had you buy one of his books when we went book shopping. And he's a serious, sad Irish author, Donald Ryan. He's probably not well known to a lot of people, but he has written, I would say, six, and they're smaller books. They're like 200 pages, but the quality is good. The stories are good. His writing's brilliant. And I always appreciate that. I've liked him for the last, I don't know, 5 years, maybe 4 years, something like that. But just how consistent he's been in producing quality. And I do think that's a skill you can learn and dedicate yourself to doing, while not losing any sort of quality or any sort of, I don't know. It seems like the romantic thing is the author who struggles with a book for 10 years or 20 years or whatever, and then finally it gets released. And then we put those people up as like, oh, that's a real writer, that, you know, that they've struggled with this manuscript for so long and it's 1,000 pages now. Yeah. But I think we should celebrate the writer who can write a funny satirical look at Christmas too.
Can just churn it out. But I think it makes it more impressive. It is hard to do.
Yeah.
To write a novel. And sometimes they do need to take more time. Sometimes things are churned out and it's like, you might have had some, but it just, you needed more time to jet.
But what there could be a bad one every now and then. But the thing that kind of saves that is he's going to keep going, you know, the bad one or the.
Yeah. But my point,
not going to slow down the train of quality. Yeah.
But as far as I know, these are good. I mean, I have to read more to find out.
We have 40 more to go.
Yeah. I'll get the audio books.
Is there an author you wish, let's do it either or, wish produced more like every year, or is there an author who is in your mind you wish that they would spend more time on books?
I think Grisham should slow down. Grisham. I think contractually obligated to do one a year. Mm-hmm. And I like his old, like The Firm and The Client and stuff. Those are pretty good. Those are solid thrillers. And I've read some of his newer stuff. And you can see the seeds, and they're hit or miss. Some of them are good. Some of them, it's like, I think you had something here, but you needed to just have it gel. There's a few things that could be tied up. I remember thinking about this book, Gray Mountain, that he wrote. And it's like, you had something there. It felt a little forced. The end felt rushed. It's like you really could have taken another year or two and turned it into a pretty solid thriller. Grisham. I'll say Grisham. And then for somebody I wish produced more, I think Charles Portis.
Okay.
He only wrote 6 and he lived to be almost 90. So I'd be, and they're all hilarious. I kind of wish he would have done more. But, you know, I don't, his process was take a lot of time, 1 every 10 years.
It's also something to be said. Pratchett was hugely popular, famous, probably wealthy, I'm imagining. There's also something when you become that popular is, A, there might be a tendency to just slow down and enjoy life or something like that. And B, the quality I would think would probably tend to get worse just by the mere fact that no one would really want to edit this famous author who is, you know, selling tens of millions of copies of books. And to see this quality in book 20, when he had been writing the series for a while, kind of goes against that and says that, you know, the quality of work wasn't diminishing as far as we can tell. And the work ethic was. So Terry Pratchett, I'm very glad that we selected this book.
Yeah.
New author to us.
Me too.
To two noobs. So
yeah. I make you do Good Omens.
Good Omens.
Maybe that'll change your opinion on Neil Gaiman.
So Neil Gaiman, okay. I read American Gods, and that was a book that was so long, in my opinion. And I'll be honest, I'm not a big mythology person, but that's one of the only times I've read a book where I thought 250 pages of this could be taken out. But I'm willing to give Neil Gaiman another go. The first book I've ever heard about of his was Neverwhere. Shout out Thane from the old bookstore. He said, yeah. And I was like, what? Neverwhere? And he's like, yeah.
Neverwhere is a good book.
Yeah. Neverwhere. Okay.
American Gods is a good book. I disagree with you about that. Okay. I know a little bit about mythology.
Maybe I read it wrong. I don't know. It took me forever to read. It's like 600 pages. And it took me like a whole summer to read. Not because I'm like a slow reader. It just was not drawing me in.
I finished
the book.
Little trooper.
I'm hung in there. I know you're patronizing me right now, but have you read everything of Neil Gaiman?
Almost.
Okay.
He's got some kids' books I haven't read.
Okay.
I haven't read the Graveyard book.
Okay.
I haven't got around to it. But most of his other stuff. He's a good writer.
One of these months will nominate, possibly select a Neil Gaiman book.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably not American Gods. I don't really want to go through that again. But
now, yeah.
So
I like it, but yeah, we'll figure it out. Anyway, he wrote a book with Terry Pratchett. And it was this kind of tone, you know, it is versatile. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Hey, fun game.
I'm ready.
That I came up with. I'm kind of just playing myself. But so the Oh God of Hangovers, right?
Yes.
When that happened in the book, it was a plot point because the Hogfather had disappeared, kidnapped by Mr. Tea Time. There was kind of a void in belief. And so all these other types of God personifications were springing up. So there's the Oh God of Hangovers. There was this happy, cheerful, kind of annoying lady who shows to try to cheer everybody up, but it's kind of embarrassing and nobody appreciates it. Just, you know, stuff like that started spring. The sock eater, just all sorts of these minor personifications were popping up. And I thought of some of my own.
Okay, I'm ready.
Personifications. The God of Blunt Truths, bluntly stated.
Okay.
Like, you're 29? That's really young to go gray. Well, yeah. What's on your face? Is that a thing? Oh, yeah. Acne. That's not.
He's kind of the oh God of bluntly telling the truth. Do you think that's a God that's probably kind of waning? You're not supposed to really tell the people the blunt truth much anymore, kind of?
You know who plays him in the movie?
Hold on. Let me think.
You know. You know it.
It's not Cumberbatch, is it?
Larry David.
Larry David. That's a good point. Good time.
What are you doing with the...
That was a terrible Larry David. Your impressions are hit or miss. Okay.
I did a better one. I got a cold.
Okay.
All right. God of always being on a diet, but never actually doing it.
I feel like these are kind of pointed at me. God of always being on.
Well, no, that's me.
Okay.
The God of always doing research and, you know. Yeah, so keto, basically, you stop burning carbs as energy and it adapts your body to burn fat for energy. And they'd be like, that's interesting, but you're eating an ice cream cone. It's like, oh, I'm not doing it. I'm just, I do my research. Chinese
food. That's kind of like the God of who knows about a lot of different things. And you'd be like, oh, so that's someone I used to not like. That's somebody kind of when you're in your early 20s, there's always someone who knows. So, the French eat cheese weird thing, and I'm like, if you ask them any more questions about the thing, they probably wouldn't have anything else. Everyone dabbles in that from time to time, but
it's a lot of people.
Yeah,
me also, but okay. I was just knows a lot of stuff about all the health things, but really just eats a lot of pizza. And
yeah,
the vegans feel fantastic, they feel really good, vegetables thrown through their system. And you're eating a pepperoni pizza. You just, in theory, vegans feel great.
Well,
I don't do it.
Do you ever do? I've done this more lately. You just Google foods and be like, why is this good for me? And it kind of makes you feel better about eating it. I will say that.
Yeah. I'm chucking down that broccoli or whatever.
Olives. I'm a big fan of olives.
I never really liked olives.
Really? Healthy. Good food. Okay.
Yeah. The God of always bringing things back to politics. Whatever said, whatever it is, that's because Congress can't get their act together.
Have you gotten more political or less political as you've aged?
Less.
Me too.
I still kind of am, but I hold back because I don't want to be annoying, and I'm cynical about it all anyway.
I know. So, I know you are.
So it's not gonna fix it. Not gonna.
Okay. Sorry, I brought it up.
God of not really knowing what you want. So these are all common things, but I'm talking the personification of these things. You know what I mean?
I'm trying to think of what that character would look like.
I don't know. Don't get caught behind them in line at a restaurant, though. At a deli. Whew. Take forever.
Are you a fast
sandwich to order?
Are you a fast orderer of food?
For the most part.
Average.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I do pretty well.
I
don't hold up the line. I'm conscious about not holding up.
Follow up question. You go into a restaurant tomorrow. Are you gonna look at their menu online? See what we got going on, or are you just gonna go in blind?
I'll go in blind.
I will look up their menu and go in the next day. I know what I want.
Yeah, that fits. That makes sense. I'll look, if we're debating between two or three places, I'll look at the menu, decide where I want to go. But if it's, hey, we're going to Austin's, I'll just all right, I'll look at the menu. If we know the place, I'll just go.
See, if we go there, I know I'm getting the meatloaf.
Okay. Yeah, I got a good bison burger.
You got, okay. Yeah, making me hungry. Yeah.
God of not really knowing what you want. That's a good bit. God of only half listening.
I think that's the best one. That could have fit into this book.
Yeah.
What was that? Huh?
Sort of a British. Oh, what's that? Yeah.
What was that? Oh, yeah. Tea time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then you could combine that God with the God who is always confident that he knows something about something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think those all two. All these guys, the guy I'm only half listening, some guy who's like, So they cut it off. They cut the mole off and they're sending it in, and I'll get the results back in a day or two. I'm pretty nervous. That's splendid. Splendid. Good job.
You're British. Yeah. See.
You know what the guy I'm only half listening does?
What's that?
Co-hosts a podcast.
Okay. Yeah. That's good. It's good.
And this one. This last one is like would be my like I'd wear a pendant of this god. He'd be my patron saint. Wear a little necklace to protect me. It's the god of mumblers. Can't really understand him. What do you say? People kind of just nod, or maybe laugh or whatever. They're just like, eh.
It's kind of to tie it back to Seinfeld, the low talker.
The low talker.
The mumbling. Yeah, God of mumbling.
I never really knew growing up, and I mumbled a lot because I knew what I was saying. So mm-hmm. I didn't really, you know. And I was very sensitive to sound. Like, I can have the TV a lot lower than other people and still hear it. I don't know what it was weird. I
did not know this. Okay.
So I always talk low, and I had a couple friends growing up who were like, what? I can't hear you. What's your deal? And I just like, what? But then at the bookshop, yeah. We worked with somebody, and he was hard of hearing anyway. But I realized, like, after talking to him for like a week, that he couldn't understand a word I was saying because he would always just kind of laugh at things. Even when I wasn't like making a joke or whatever, somebody probably was like, oh, he thinks he's funny. So I would just say something like whatever, like, yeah, I don't know, the door's kind of jammed. And he'd be like, huh, good one.
Like, you're talking about.
And then I was like, so eventually I figured, oh, he doesn't know what I'm saying. And he's just kind of laughing because he thinks I'm making a joke. Hmm. So yeah. And I try to talk louder, but it doesn't always work.
I can't hear in warehouses, like in a back stockroom thing. If you've never been in one, the ceiling's usually tall. There's a lot of like open space above you. And yeah, your voice gets lost. And I've definitely, people have talked to me and I've definitely just been, yep. Yeah, yeah. I don't.
Sometimes it's not worth saying what, like four
times. Yeah, you don't want to say what.
It's not that important.
Mm.
Yeah. Hey, but you know what helps is that these microphones help.
The microphones help. The
mumbling.
You and I, that's probably why we're friends, is we both mumble.
Yeah. Probably. And we didn't really, yeah, listen or anything.
Just in our own head. No listening.
Yeah.
Anyway. Those are some good gods. I like that. Yeah. Which one would you, you would solve crimes or solve the issues of the world with? Which one of those gods?
God of Mumblers.
I mean, the God of Mumblers is going to be there. Let's make a trio. Which one else?
Well, so the God of Mumblers is like a Columbo type. People don't understand them, but you know.
Okay. Like
Columbo's the case, unassuming. And then it'd be like at the very end, he'd say something clear, but that's it. Like in Jay and Silent Bob. Silent Bob usually say one thing at the very end. Be like that. Okay. Really clear at the very end.
Very clear. I like that. It's fun. I like that. Good game.
Yeah.
So
cool. Thematically appropriate because of the book we read.
You got your crave juices going. But I say we both recommend this book, correct?
Yeah.
I imagine most people, not most people, but a lot of people have read Terry Pratchett. So people are probably judging us.
People who read a lot of them.
Yeah. They're probably shaking their heads. I'm curious if you have read a lot of Terry Pratchett. What is your favorite in the Discworld series? And is there any sort of rhyme or reason to how you should read the books in the series?
And do they trail off? Because we just went on a whole thing about how impressive it was. He didn't
trail
off. There's kind of an assumption there.
True. Kind of on a sad note, Terry Pratchett passed away from Alzheimer's, and I believe some of the books were published. I don't know exactly how close they were tied to when he was kind of diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's, but I was kind of, that's sort of, if the books sort of tail off at the very end, there's
a I don't, and I don't mean that.
Yeah.
I mean,
I know what you meant, but yeah.
of the 40 that he wrote, were they all pretty solid? Like this. So,
I mean, we read book 20 and it was very good.
Book 20 and Good Omens.
Which is a crazy number to be at.
So. There's a lot of books. That's very impressive. I didn't realize how popular he was.
Very popular.
When I was looking up the stats and the sales and everything, he was very, very popular. I mean, they knew he was popular here, but in written. He's,
yeah, there's some like pull down of like books. You know, I don't know exactly what pull it was, but like he has like 6 or 7 books on that. Maybe
the best books.
Yeah, it wasn't really the best books, but it's like some sort of BBC like favorite, like kind of like, oh, these are our kind of books. These are tied to our culture. This is our sense of humor.
Very British books.
Yeah,
probably what it was called.
Something like that.
Very British book list.
Very British book. I love the British. Come on, don't
we do gravitate to a lot of British type people here, don't we?
Me, I do.
No, for the podcast. We meet a lot of British.
Do we? Yeah, we probably do.
Yeah, Flashman.
Yeah. But hey, we'll try to read more all over the world. I'm trying to get us into Eastern Europe sad books. Don't worry about that. Some German.
It wasn't any criticism. Just, okay.
Observation.
We speak the same language.
It's very true.
Less than the British.
Would you rather have a British accent or American accent? New York. Okay. How about this? Hold on. Would you rather have a Scottish accent or a New York accent?
Scottish.
Okay. Me too.
I want a New York accent. The British accent, it depends on which one.
It's true.
I want the Cockney accent. No, and I don't want the posh accent. I don't want it to be too. I can't do the voices very well because of my cold. But, you know, I take the sort of John Cleese, the kind of upper crust, but not too. You know, some of the upper crust people get a little.
Yeah,
sounds like a speech impediment. Father, that sort of thing. No.
Gotcha.
But I don't want the Cockney accent either.
Yeah. You could tie it mumbling. Some of these accents lend itself more to mumbling than others.
I think mumblers maybe get away with it more if they're British. Pick up a accent, not the words, and they just assume it's a sharp guy.
Yeah, he's got a
mumbling about.
Yeah, he's bumbling. He's bumbling about.
Mumbling about crumpets.
I've been to Scotland, and to be honest with you, I can if I was face to face with him, I could understand everything they were saying. It was hard to eavesdrop on conversations. So if I was in a pub and I was trying to listen to what someone behind me was talking about, it was very hard for me to catch what they were saying. Does that make sense?
I guess so. Kind of the background noise.
Yeah.
The accent was so thick.
Yeah. Accent was so thick, I couldn't eavesdrop on the conversations.
Well, that's a shame.
It was a shame.
But I missed out on a lot of juicy stuff.
Oh, French.
You know where the southern accent, the American southern accent, comes from?
England.
Well, a lot of the early settlers were Scots Irish mercenary, okay, right? Who had fought in the wars in Ireland. And then they came over to the Americas, and it's just sort of over 100 or so years, it kind of spun off into its own thing. So it's that Scots Irish accent isolated into a new continent, kind of like turned into the stereotypical southern accent that you can kind of see it once you know that. Heavy skulls thing kind of morphing into a sort of like pickup truck top southern thing.
Oh man.
A lot of southerners just say
pickup truck. You like a good accent. That's what
they, yeah.
It's I think you're just gonna bring up subjects where you can have this.
Sweet. Just drop random bits of
sweet tea.
Yeah, I'm gonna have some sweet tea on the porch. Pull my shotgun around my finger. That's enough.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't know.
More.
Are you done?
Yes.
Oh boy. I don't know what we've done. What territory we've ventured into, but audiobooks are just around the corner for us as we
borderline offensive territory. I think
borderline, I think your heart's in just you do everybody. So there's no, you're not singling anybody.
Got a lot of cold medicine too.
Yeah.
A lot of NyQuil and tea and kombucha.
Are you on the NyQuil right now?
Not really.
Okay.
I'm going to once we're done here.
Okay. Well,
cough medicine, kombucha, tea and lemon.
You're just attacking this cold with everything you got. So
yeah, I kind of like it too.
Matt, I want to talk about what we have coming up for the listener. So we finished up December. We're on to January. We've picked our January book.
How are you doing on that, by the way?
I bought the book. Foundation.
Yeah.
Isaac Asimov.
Hey, there you go. Weird. You said it right.
Asimov.
You haven't started it yet?
I have not started it yet.
Okay, that's cool. I was going to say, I'm about halfway through.
Oh.
And I was excited because in theory, because I'm liking it, I'm eating it up. In theory, we could have it done and be recorded within the same month we picked. That would be no pressure, though.
I got, 12 days? We're recording this.
Okay, I shouldn't have brought it up.
I could do it. Okay.
I'm going to do it fast.
And let everyone know, this is a book you've read before, and I'm coming in as a quote-unquote noob. I don't know any really backstory about the book.
Yeah.
So, that's our January book.
Yeah.
We have our Patreon book, Paper Line, which I'm a third of the way through, by George Plimpton, about a story about a writer who goes to try out for a professional football team in the 1960s. And so far, I really like it. Some interesting.
They let him play. Like he's going through training.
He plays. He's training. Yeah.
Yeah. It's good. I like it too.
Then we have The Red and the Black, a book that Matt has had done for a while. And he's going to read some outside source book material. And I am near completing seasonal book for us classic by Stendhal. A lot to unpack,
what's going on there, right?
I'm curious when we do the episode. I think we have two different translations, so that's one thing we'll kind of look at when we do that episode, maybe more than one episode, but it's to see how a book gets translated, because he's doing a lot. I think this is one of the first books where there's a lot of internal dialogue with the characters, and sometimes you kind of like, I have caught myself being like, is he saying this out loud, or is this? And then I have to remember, okay, this is like an internal thought.
You're in his thought process. You're very aware of their
motives. And it's not just one character; it's many characters where you're inside So,
I liked it too. There's a lot there. It might be. I don't know how we're gonna do it. We might have to have a special spin-off type thing, like the smart. We grapple with smart theory type stuff.
Okay.
There's
a lot of also, it's one of those books where it wouldn't hurt to know a lot about French history.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, I'm doing extra. There's going to be some, it's interesting. I'm excited for it. But, you know, we're kind of just two idiots talking about random stuff. Yeah, but this is, so.
But hey, we tackled the big stuff.
Theory corner. No, it's good. It'll be good.
It'll be our literary. We also have sometimes a great notion, which we are still plugging away at, by Ken Kesey.
Yeah.
Very good book. And then we have, for the first time, a yearly book, Life and Fate, Vasily Grossman, which a listener suggested to us to read. And we took it and we expanded on it. It's nearly a thousand pages. So that will be sort of our 2022 big. We'll also have seasonal books, but we're also going to do this one big.
I think
we've talked about kind of splitting it up throughout the year.
Kind of updates. It counts as one of your sad European.
Exactly.
European things.
Yes.
And it's World War II books, so maybe I can kind of hang in there.
I think I'm excited. That's a book I've been had circled on my TBR for a while, so I'm excited to get into that. I think I've covered all the books that we are currently.
We're working on. We're getting them done, setting them up, knocking them down.
There you go.
Excited to talk about Foundation. Hey, our football brackets are ongoing.
Exactly.
There are two perfect of the. I think we have like eight in the pool. There are two perfect brackets so far.
Ooh.
But there's still a lot to be played, because we'll see.
And the winner of that will get, and it can't be one either Matt or I, will get a bookmark that we have and tell us the genre of the book you would like, and we will send you a personal book from our library to you.
Yeah.
So
that's a cool thing we have unlocked to the football episodes we did on Patreon. So if you're curious about what we do over there, you can listen without having to be an official member. Check it out.
Yep. I don't think I have any other news.
I got some exciting book news. We can save it till next time if you want.
No, end on this.
All right. Hey, so you've seen the movie Heat, right?
Yes.
You like the movie Heat?
I should have stopped you. I've seen 3/4 of the movie Heat, but yes, I did like it.
You haven't seen it?
I was on a plane, so.
Okay.
No, but keep.
Well, anyway, hey. So, I like the movie Heat by Michael Mann.
Yeah.
And I think, you know what, you know what's happening. This is like book news I just saw today. Michael Mann is publishing a book that is both a prequel and sequel to Heat.
Prequel and a sequel.
I think it's going to have the characters before leading up to the events in the movie and then kind of show where they wound up. But he's writing it in book form. Which I thought was cool because Quentin Tarantino did something like that last year, and I think it did well enough. Book publishing companies are going to other directors and saying, hey, do you want to... So this actually sounds good.
Okay.
There are certain directors I don't, or movies I don't care about. I don't think they should go anywhere near this. But Michael Mann, I'm very interested in the Heat. It's Heat 2, Hot.
It's a terrible name.
I don't think it's called Hot. I think it might be called Heat 2. But it's a prequel and a sequel called Heatier.
Heatier, okay.
Like meteor and right. Heat. But no, for real, I'm looking forward very to it. Because I thought you'd seen Heat. I didn't know you.
I always disappoint you with the movie stuff.
How you don't want to know how it ends?
I didn't even see how it ends. I didn't.
I know. You didn't want to know? Like, it's available. I have it on DVD. It's available to stream. The whole movie's leading up to this big heist. You didn't even want to see how that wound up? You're just like, oh, that was good. Get off the plane and just...
We'll talk to you soon.